Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve the common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And there are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Well, welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. To start the meeting off, Dave, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. Good morning, everybody. I'm Dave, an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I'm truly grateful I'm alive and sober today. And truly grateful that I've found the absolute best medicine that treats so perfectly the thing that's wrong with me. Today's all I've got. Today is all I need to worry about. Today being me is sufficient. And today I'm comfortable living with all my imperfections, of which there are numerous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was slowly dying from a fatal illness called untreated alcoholism. And I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know what recovery looked like. All I know is that I was dying on the inside and I wanted there to be change in my life. I didn't want to continue living the way that I was living. And I found out that this illness attacks me on three fronts, mentally, physically, and spiritually. The mental and the physical aspect of it just slowly wears you down until you get to that point where I got to, where I was dead inside. And I wanted to stop. I didn't know how. I wanted things to be different, but I didn't know what to do. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because it was suggested by some people that cared about me, including some counsellors and what have you. And I learned about the mental obsession and the physical allergy. I would get this thought in my head that would push out all other thoughts. And all I wanted to do, that thought was basically convincing me that, well, I'd had a great day, so I should have a drink, or it'd been a really crap day, so I should have a drink. I got a raise, I should have a drink. I've been kicked out of another place, I should have a drink. And once that thought was in my head, it led me to a drink. And once that first drink was in my system, I couldn't guarantee you every single time when I was going to be able to safely stop. I'd get this physical craving, which would kick in. And sometimes the craving would be satisfied after a couple of drinks, but more often than not, it would not. I was that guy. I'd go out of the bar and I'd have a vomit and I'd come back in, order another drink, have it, and say, must have been the damn chicken. Because once that first drink was in my system, I couldn't not drink. And it would generally lead me to blackout. I'd be blind drunk. I'd be able to function sometimes for hours. And people would ask me the next day, oh my gosh, do you remember such and such and this and that? And I would not remember. And it was really frustrating. And that was one of the aspects that I didn't like about it. And so I would do everything I could to try and manage not blacking out. I tried chemicals, and that didn't work out so well for me in long term. It might have given me a little bit, a few extra hours of drinking, but no, long term that was detrimental to me mentally and physically also. So I'd be in these states of despair. I wanted things to change. I'd make all these commitments with tears in my eyes sometimes. I'm not going to do that again. And I could go a couple of days. I could go a couple of weeks. I was a two-week wonder. I'd go 2 weeks, but then that mental obsession would kick in and it would push out all other thoughts. And the only thing that would calm all the noise that went on in my head when I was in a sober state was to put a drink in my system. And then once that first drink was in my system, all bets were off. And so I, over time, it just slowly killed me, and I got to this point where I wanted to stop, but I couldn't. On an intellectual level, I knew it was probably going to be a bad idea to put a drink in my system because of the consequences of a week ago or a month ago. But I could not drink, no matter how hard I tried. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and initially I was very stubborn. I was that guy that would... I was better than or worse than. I'd listen to people talking about their drinking and their recovery and everything in between, and I was either better than them or I was worse than them. I wasn't willing to be like them. There's this saying, if you want what we have, then do what we do. And I didn't want what these people had, because I was stubborn. I wanted my old life back. But what I've discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous is that there's a new life and a new freedom available to me. So I ended up homeless and jobless after I had everything going for me, and there'd be people in my lives who would be in despair because I was a good kid. I was apt. I was a hard worker. On the outside, I had everything going for me, but inside, I was dead. And, the people that cared about me, they didn't understand what was going on. They'd tell me, you should just stop, or you should just maybe have two. But they didn't understand that once I started, I couldn't stop. And so here I am. I come into AA, and I'm different. My case was different than everyone else's. And I kept going to meetings. And over time, it took 6.5 months for me to lose everything in AA because I was stubborn. I wanted to do it my way. I came in thinking, okay, just give me a little bit of time and I'll get this outfit up and running to its potential. There's a few changes I need to make to the literature, to the format of the meetings and things like that. And, I was deluded. And in the end, I got smashed enough that I became willing to listen to suggestions. And what I, over 6.5 months in AA, when I kept drinking, I'd hear over and over and over and over people talking about getting a sponsor and joining a home group and going to regular meetings regularly and working my way through the steps and doing service, and I didn't know what that meant because I was stubborn, and they would say it was a suggestion because you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much because of how stubborn they are. And so what I did was, when I had nothing left, I turned the suggestions into requirements. So I required myself to get a home group. I required myself to get a sponsor. I required myself to go to regular meetings regularly. A sponsor is someone that's been in my position and has been had the literature explained to them, has been taken through the steps by their sponsor, who's had the same thing done to them by their sponsor. And the idea there is that they've made all the mistakes, so hopefully I don't have to make the same ones. And I became a sponge for information. I was so desperate not to go back to the way that I was living that I was actually pretty full on in my recovery. I've relaxed a lot more today because I know today what I didn't know back then is that this stuff works. It absolutely works if you're willing to let it work. I just wanted to do... There's a lot of people who seem to be just doing enough to stay sober, and they're existing in life, and I didn't want to exist in life. I wanted to be a part of life. I wanted to live life. So I was just, what next? What next? What else? A dear friend of mine said to me, if you take a thimble to the ocean, you're going to get a thimble full of water. If you take a dump truck to the ocean, you're going to get a dump truck full of water. And I just wanted everything that was available. And so I became excited about recovery. I kept doing AA until I wanted to do AA. Initially, it was because I had to. But I love recovery. I love the life that's available to me today. I've got trust in my life. My mother and my sister have been given me keys to their houses. I've got people who go away for periods at a time and give me the keys to their house and say, and the keys to their cars and say, could you please look after the animals and the house, and we'll see you in 6 weeks. And that's never happened before. I'm employable today. I'm an honest and trusted employee. I have friends and dear friends who want nothing more from me except to see me stay well. I've got I'm in a beautiful relationship with a beautiful lady, and I'm promised that the best is yet to come. Every time I think that, wow, life is so great, uncertainty will happen. It's like the universe will throw all these darts at me simultaneously. Some of them go deeper than I might have expected. Some of them stick for longer than I might have hoped, but they all fall out eventually, and through the other side, life's somehow a little bit better. There's an uncertainty, there's change, there's problems, but welcome to the human race. Life goes on, but thanks to the AA 12-step program of recovery, I can look at life differently, and more importantly for someone like me, I can react differently to life. And the best is yet to come. That's what's promised me. So I just want to thank everybody for listening, and thanks for this opportunity to talk.
Thanks, Dave. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. The next person to share is Georgina. Would you like to share?
Yeah. Hi, Georgina, alcoholic.
Hi, Georgina.
So my experience is that I had about 10 years of drinking, six of which I would have been a daily drinker. So my family on both sides were quite heavy drinkers for quite a few generations back, and I grew up with that being a very normal part of my life. Was every family occasion, every time we got together, was an excuse to tie one on. And even when I was little, I was given alcohol. And I didn't know it then, but every time I drank, I immediately wanted more of what I was given. And so it would have been when I was about 15 or 16, when parties in high school were just starting up. That was when I would really start drinking quite heavily. And that's when the consequences sort of started for me. And I remember one time coming home after a particularly bad night and my father opening the door and saying, don't make a habit of it. And I had so much resentment towards him for so many different reasons that it almost became a challenge. And from that day on, you know, I just, whatever excuse I had, whether it was good or bad or nothing in particular had happened, I would just drink, you know. I just loved that feeling, and I couldn't get enough of it. And when I started university, and I was having lectures and days off, that was when I started to drink during the week. And basically every time I sort of raised the bar and drank more and thought that I could get away with it, that was how my illness progressed. That was how my disease progressed for me, was that I was feeling like I was getting away with it. And, you know, after uni, I started full-time work, and I had a huge resentment of having to go into work from 9 to 5 each day, and thinking that I couldn't drink during the week. But that really didn't stop me. So it would be one day a week that I would get as drunk as I would on the weekend. And then you know, I just sort of kept going from there. It became 2 days, 3 days, and eventually it was every day. Every day I needed that amount of drink to, I guess, cope or get to sleep or function. And that's when life on the rat wheel sort of started for me, was, you know, just the day in, day out was the exact same thing. I was getting up, still hungover from the night before, and trying to get to work. I would always be late. I would always be incredibly unwell, and trying to hide things from people and lying to people and doing the absolute bare minimum I needed to get through the day, and then I could start the whole process over again. And as this progressed, my relationships with my friends and my family began to suffer, and it didn't seem to bother me that much. I would get into trouble, know that I'd done something wrong. I would taper off for a little bit. I would make the necessary apologies. I would do whatever it took to get them off my back. And then once I felt that I had been punished enough, and I was the one that would decide that, not anyone else. Once I'd got over all of that, I was like, right, now it's time to go back to where I was. And it would just go back to exactly where it was and continue to get worse. And then there were two sort of major life events for me that really progressed my alcoholism a lot further. And the first one was that my boyfriend of about 5 years decided to leave me. And the excuses he gave me were he wanted kids and I didn't, and he wanted to travel and I didn't. But I could see in his eyes what he wasn't saying, and there was just the repetition of what he had to go through every weekend with me was just, he couldn't bear it anymore, and he couldn't even tell me that. But him leaving me, because I was incredibly dependent on him, destroyed me. I felt that my world had ended. I felt that my rock, my only person that I ever loved, was gone. And, you know, that was an excuse. That was another excuse to say, you know what, life's really not worth living anymore. And I just decided to drink as much as I could, as often as I could. And that was for another about a year and a half. And I was still managing to go to work, hadn't lost my job, lost most of my friends, but still had one group that would drink the way I drank, and that was enough for me. And then the second thing that happened was that my mother passed away. And now my mother, I believe, had the same disease I did, and it was a difficult thing watching her succumb to that and having to see her in hospital. And yeah, it was really hard. But rather than that sort of pull me up short and make me think, hey, maybe this is a time for you to change what you're doing, it was just another reason to destroy myself, because I'd lost someone who loved me unconditionally. And I couldn't cope with the grief and the pain, and all I had was alcohol, and that's all I thought I needed. And so I buried my head in the sand, and I decided that I didn't need anyone or anything. I just needed to drink, and it didn't matter what happened to me. I just needed to drink. And that eventually got me to a point where I had to be taken to hospital, and I sort of had a night where they thought I was going to harm myself, and so they needed to take care of me. And it was difficult because I looked down at myself and I saw that I was wearing the exact same hospital issue gown they give you nationwide, I guess. And I just had a flashback to, you know, my mother, and it just felt, I can't explain how it felt, but it was just like I'd been stripped bare and raw, and I had nothing left. And all of the grief and all of the pain that I'd been trying to hide came to the surface, and I couldn't ignore it anymore. So when I was sat down with the psych team in the morning, I just, for once in my life, I was completely honest about what was happening. I was in too much pain. I couldn't control my drinking, and I didn't know it then. I didn't know the words, but my life was unmanageable. And through their suggestions and their referrals, I made my way to CADS. And from CADS, that was the Community for Alcohol and Drug Services, I think. Yeah. They recommended I come to an AA meeting. And my first AA meeting, I remember walking towards it feeling so much resentment towards my parents because I felt that they were the ones that needed the treatment and not me. And I had so much contempt for something that I didn't understand. But when I walked in and I sat down and people started sharing, there was so much relief, and I immediately identified and I just broke down. And that was what I needed to hear. And since then, I've been working the program, doing the steps, working with my sponsor, and, you know, things have been getting so much better. I have the hope back. I have my life back, and it's a much better quality of life. And, I just keep coming back. Thank you.
Thanks, Regina. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship on this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. Our last person to share this morning is Michael. Would you like to share?
Yes, thank you. Hi, guys. I'm Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
It's good to be here. My home group is Reservoir Dogs in Boston, Massachusetts. It meets Monday nights at 8 p.m. Visiting New Zealand. And it's great to be on the show. My first drink was at age 15 in Dallas, Texas. I had snuck out from my parents' house to meet a bunch of friends, and we went over to my friend's backyard, and I didn't know anything about alcohol at that point, but I wanted to fit in and be cool, and so they had a bottle of gin and a bottle of tequila, and I mixed them together. And it was disgusting. And I drank it, and then I promptly vomited all over their back porch. And my friends hated me. They made a big, I made a big mess. And, we definitely didn't look cool. But I knew the next day when I woke up that, I had a great night, and I wanted to be doing that again. And that approach towards alcohol, that approach towards, finding some space that was my own, drove the next 5-6 years of my life. And it wasn't quick. People say that alcohol is a progressive disease. And slowly over time, I found myself more and more interested in getting back to that place where, I didn't have to worry about what was going on in school or what was going on in my job or what was going on in my parents. I just had this space where, I could be me and I didn't have to worry and I could be okay. And, alcohol gave me that effect, right? It gave me that sense of ease and relief that I was looking for and that I didn't even know I needed. I didn't think I was an alcoholic growing up. I didn't think that I had a problem with alcohol. I was a very functional individual. I was good at school. I played sports. I was on the debate team. I got into a good college. Over time, all of those things fell away because I kept putting, getting drunk, getting high ahead of everything else in my life. And by the time I was a freshman in college, I was blacking out every weekend. People would come up and ask me and say, "Hey, have you drank before? Because you're not drinking like the rest of us." And that was really odd for me because I didn't understand why other people weren't on my level, so to speak, or partaking as I wanted to. And it was, I needed to get back to whatever that place was, the lack of control that I couldn't really find. And after I got back from my freshman year of school, consequences started happening. I got pulled over after Memorial Day weekend and got a DUI and spent the night in jail. And you would think that that would slow me down, but in any case, I walked past it. I thought that I could live my life the way I wanted to, and that these consequences they wouldn't really matter, and that I would be okay. And what ended up happening is that My brother fell off of a balcony and just died one night. I got a call in the middle of the night, and they're like, hey, you need to come home because this had happened. And I, for my whole life, thought that, like, I could just, you know, deal with problems as they come up. And finally, I was just, like, hit with this thing that I couldn't deal with it, and I didn't know what to do. And my first thought was, I need to find a bottle of Jack and just drown in it. You know, I need to, you know, take all of the sense that I'm feeling and just get rid of it somehow. And I turned to alcohol to do that. And I think there was a turning point there where before I drank because, you know, I wanted to, because it was fun, because, you know, I was social. And, like, after that, I drank because, like, I needed to find that oblivion, that sense of just, like, being gone. And for the next 2.5 years, like, I ran rampant throughout my life, throughout the people's lives around me. Until one morning, I woke up in a hospital because I was, like, manic and psychotic, and the police caught me, and they caught me, and I woke up in this hospital, and I felt this tremendous sense of relief that for, like, once in my life, I didn't have to worry about what was going on, and that, like, someone was going to take care of me, and that, like, maybe, you know, I didn't have to live the way that I was living, because I just felt this, I knew that what I was doing is wrong, and I didn't have a way out or a path out. And that sense of relief was, like, very quickly replaced with, like, this tremendous sense of fear. You know, I couldn't just leave this hospital. Like, what was going to happen to all the things in my life? Like, I needed to go back to, like, managing what was going on. And eventually, they did let me out, and I did leave. And a counselor at the school I was at was an alcoholic, and he sat me down and he said, "Hey, Michael, you know you're not an alcoholic because your brother died, right? You're an alcoholic because your relationship with alcohol is not like other people's. You know, when you take a drink, like, you lose control, and, like, you're going to take another one and another after that. And, like, you've shown that, like, you, for any given period of time, cannot stay away from alcohol, and that some little thing will come up and that you will be back drinking again before you know it." I didn't disagree with him in that moment, and I don't know what it was, some sort of grace, but I didn't disagree. And he took me to an AA meeting, and I saw a bunch of people that were, like, way too happy, and I didn't really know what was going on. And they asked me to get, like, a 24-hour chip, and so I got a 24-hour chip, and I came back the next week, and eventually I got a sponsor within that group, and that wasn't my last sponsor, but it was my first. And he asked me to call him, and I didn't. And then I stopped going to that meeting. And eventually I found a home group, right? And I found a meeting where, you know, I felt at home, that I could walk into, and that, like, I found someone that I could do the steps with, and that I felt a part of something that was greater than me. And I formed a relationship with something that was beyond myself, that, like, today I call my higher power, and that lets me lead a life that is beyond my expectations, that I'd never really dreamt of before. And today I feel okay, and I feel good, and, like, I can do anything I set my mind to. And it's really thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous and, like, the power of this program. So thanks for having me.
Thanks, Michael. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We've had members of our fellowship in sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. If you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.